The English Eccentric by E. O. Higgins.
In 1765, a distinguished French scholar by the name of Pierre Jean Grosley visited England for the first time and was struck by the level of eccentricity he observed in the natives. Writing home on the subject, he noted that this unusual behaviour he had observed could be attributed to a mixture of fogs, beef, and beer, aggravated by the tedium of the English Sunday. As the comedian Julian Clary once said, "The English like eccentrics, they just don't like them living next door." But what is eccentricity? Eccentricity is that sort of behaviour in individuals that is considered odd, unusual, or quirky. It describes an often unintentional breaking away or dismissal of the social norms, to pursue avenues in life that are often considered beyond normal priorities. The eccentrics we'll meet in this podcast series are often people with corkscrew minds, peculiar obsessions, and largely incomprehensible outlooks. They straddle the sexes and all social classes. Some of their stories are famous, but most are unjustifiably obscure. But hopefully, what they all are is worth a listen.
Robin Friday, 1952 to 1990. The man that don't give a fuck.
The 1970s were the heyday for character footballers, the likes of Georgie Best and Charlie George. With pop star haircuts and dangerous playing styles, they were famed for their womanizing and hard living lifestyles. Yet, there's a footballer that was head and shoulders above all of them. And though you've probably never heard of him, he really wouldn't have cared. Robin Friday and his twin brother Tony were born on the 27th of July 1952 in Acton, West London, and were brought up in the home of their maternal grandparents before the family was eventually moved to a prefab in nearby Acton Green. The Friday brothers attended their first professional football match at the age of two, when their father took them to see a Brentford game, a team that their maternal grandfather had played for in his youth. Both brothers maintained an interest in football, however, by the age of 10, Robin had developed notably advanced ball skills, and according to his dad, could flick an orange up onto his neck with his foot, balance it, and then let it roll back down his body, before catching it back on his foot again. His brother Tony, on the other hand, did quite well academically, largely due to the fact that he actually attended school. He later said of his brother,
"He's always just bunking off having birds around the park."
All Robin's time spent scoring in the park evidently didn't go unnoticed, and Friday was scouted by numerous London clubs. He joined Crystal Palace's School of Excellence at just 12, before moving on to Queen's Park Rangers at 13, and then on to Chelsea. However, Friday's inability to change his individualistic and aggressive style of play saw these teams lose interest in developing him further. Unfazed by any of this, Robin left school at 15, a year before his twin brother, and became a trainee plasterer. It turned out that working as a plasterer didn't really suit Robin. After 2 months, he'd given it up. He had a brief spell as a van driver, but quickly found this similarly dispiriting. Finally, he tried his hand as a window cleaner. But again, it wasn't long before he threw in his chamois. His indifference to work perplexed his father, who stated later, "He just didn't care." Perhaps attracted by the hours, Robin turned to crime. But evidently his heart wasn't in this either, and he was quickly apprehended for petty theft and sent to Felton Borstal, where he served 14 months. It was there, playing for the Prison League's All-Star men's team, that his interest in football was reignited. Upon release from Chokey in early 1971, a friend took him along to a training day with Walthamstow Avenue, a semi-professional league club. Friday played so well, he was signed on the spot, on wages of £10 per week. After only playing a few games for Walthamstow Avenue, Friday decamped to Hayes FC, who offered more money. However, despite playing some quite remarkable football, Friday was chiefly known at the club for his endless boozing. On one occasion, the team had started a match a player short because Friday had been on a bender the night before with some asphalters he'd befriended. When he did turn up, 10 minutes before the end of the game, he was still clearly off his tit. Regardless, as they were a man down and the match was goalless, he was sent on. Staggering about the pitch, the opposition paid Friday little attention, and, consequently, he went on to score the late winning goal. Having scored 46 goals in 67 appearances, in January 1974, Friday signed for Reading for £750 and spent his first training session with the club, kicking out the legs of as many established Reading players as he could, and indeed, successfully put three of them out of the next game. Friday's incredible technical ability quickly made him popular among Reading supporters and the press. However, he remained unpredictable on the pitch. After sustaining a calf injury playing against Exeter, Friday returned for the team's next game and, still rattled, repeatedly fouled the opposing players. Though his attacking style also won him some praise. "The Reading team has been transformed by Robin Friday, who's now scored a remarkable 16 goals in 5 games," reported the Reading Evening Post. Despite turning the fortunes of Reading FC, Friday's off-the-field activities continued to upset most of his teammates. Frequently, Friday would spend his time arseholed on American Colt 45 malt, and consequently, he was banned from most of the pubs in the area. The Boar's Head in Reading had cause to ban him on no less than 10 separate occasions. One night out in 1974, after all the pubs had closed, Friday went to an all-night club called Churchill's, reportedly Reading's worst nightclub. And as you can imagine, that's up against some pretty stiff competition. Having been drinking for several hours already, Friday, who was wearing a long fur coat, was admitted to the club and immediately walked onto the dance floor. Dropping the coat, he revealed that he was wearing nothing but a pair of hobnail boots. When the 1973-1974 season ended, Friday celebrated this by undergoing an operation to have his finger tattoos removed, and then joined a hippie commune in Cornwall. He obviously liked it, as he was absent without explanation when training started again for the 1974-1975 season. He appeared back in July 1975, whilst his team were playing a friendly against Watford. He was sent on, and despite missing all the training, comfortably outperformed everyone on the pitch. Despite his ability, Friday's unusual behaviour continued to disturb his teammates.
"Some of the things he did was funny, but other things were just mad," said winger John Murray.
On the way back from an away match, the team bus pulled into the side of the road to allow Friday to urinate. Friday noticed that they were beside a graveyard and immediately jumped over the wall and began stealing a number of stone angels from a graveside that he intended to place next to the club chairman Frank Waller, who was sleeping on the coach. Confused by the flurry of invective he received, it was left to Reading manager Charlie Hurley to gently explain why desecrating a gravesite was a bad thing. Later, Friday walked into the bar of the hotel the team was staying at, carrying a swan that he had found in the grounds. Once again, Hurley had to have words. Friday's performance at Reading was so strong that he began to attract serious interest from other clubs.
"Friday is of course much more than Reading's top scorer and best striker,"
wrote the Reading Evening Post on the 3rd of November 1975.
"He is the most vital cog in the team."
the fear that Friday put into opposing teams was palpable, and his choice never to wear shin pads, thinking them pointless, meant that Friday was often tackled ferociously by defenders of opposing teams, but without much noticeable effect. On the 31st of March 1976, Reading were playing Tranmere Rovers in an important fixture presided over by internationally experienced referee Clive Thomas. Friday, who had already scored 18 goals that season, rose to the occasion by scoring a goal that the referee said was the greatest goal he'd ever seen. With the score 2-0 to Reading, the goalkeeper, Steve Death, threw out a ball to defender Gary Peters, who passed it high and diagonally across the pitch towards the team's forward. Friday, who was standing at the left-hand corner of his own penalty area, jumped into the air and stopped the ball with his chest. Landing back down, Friday realised that he had inadvertently swerved around and was now facing away from the opposition's goal. Undeterred, he ferociously booted the ball back down the pitch over his shoulder from 30 feet. The ball dipped, swerved, and rocketed straight into the top right-hand corner of Tranmere Rovers' net, stunning the crowd, the players, and Thomas, the referee, who put his hands over his head in disbelief.
I'll never forget it. It was the sheer ferocity of the shot on the volley, over his shoulder. If it hadn't gone into the top corner of the net, it would have broken the goalpost. Even up against the likes of Pelé and Cruyff, that rates as the best goal I've ever seen.
Reading went on to win the game 5-0. After the match, the still stunned Thomas told Friday he'd never seen a better goal. Friday responded,
"Really? You should come down here more often. I'd do that sort of thing all the time."
Friday's use of Class A drugs began to take its toll on his performance, and would see him regularly missing training sessions. Consequently, the club's management became increasingly keen to sell him. And although Queen's Park Rangers and West Ham showed interest, they hesitated, unsure whether they could handle him. After Hurley demanded he quit the drugs for the good of the team, Friday requested he made him available for transfer. Reading's asking price stood at £50,000, and the first transfer offer came from second division side Cardiff City in around mid-December. Cardiff boss Jimmy Andrews bid £28,000, half of his offer the year before, which Reading's directors accepted. Friday had wanted to go to a First Division London club and wanted more money, and so was reluctant to go to the Welsh club. However, when Hurley told him that unless he went to Cardiff, he would be released, he agreed and travelled to Wales. Though obviously he wasn't going to pay the train fare. Upon arrival at Cardiff Central Station, Friday, who was only in possession of a Reading station platform ticket, was promptly arrested by the transport police. This meant that his new Cardiff manager, Jimmy Andrews, was forced to bail his new player out of the police station before taking him to sign his contract. It was probably a good indication of how things might pan out. Despite drinking heavily into the morning the day before, Friday still turned out an impressive performance at his Cardiff debut. Playing Fulham on the 1st of January 1977, a team that included former England captain Bobby Moore, Friday marked his first match with the Welsh club with 2 goals, and was snapped by press photographers squeezing Moore's testicles during the game. Cardiff went on to win 3-0. Andrews was so happy with Friday's performance that he phoned Hurley.
"Oh, Charlie,"
Andrews enthused.
"He was magnificent. He tore them inside out. Moore was chasing him all over the place."
The Cardiff manager continued to praise his new acquisition until Hurley finally stopped him.
"Jimmy, you've only had him 4 days,"
he told him.
"Give it a few months."
And lo, after Friday's brilliant performance in his debut match, he quickly became less reliable and would routinely miss matches. Though he was supposed to be living in Diggs in Bristol, when Andrews would look for him there, he'd be informed that he hadn't been around for weeks. Even when he did show up for games, he made no time for his squad. According to teammate Paul Wendt, he would simply leave after each match and not be heard of again until he returned.
He didn't even bother to shower. He'd just get dressed, take his carrier bag full of dry martini and go.
One match that Friday did make was a game against Luton Town on the 16th of April 1977. After clashing repeatedly early on with Luton's Miliar Alexic, Friday was reprimanded by the referee for a high tackle against the goalkeeper. Relieved not to receive a booking, Friday uncharacteristically held out his hand in apology to Alexic. It was not accepted, and instead Alexic continued to rant at Friday for his conduct. This, it turns out, was probably a mistake. Following a free kick, Friday stalked down the pitch, stole the ball from Luton defender John Faulkner, broke away, rounded on Alexic and smashed the ball straight past him. As the Luton keeper scrambled to rescue the ball from the back of the net, he turned around just in time to see Friday jog past him, smiling and flipping the V sign. Cardiff went on to win the match 4-2. After failing to turn up for pre-season training with Cardiff before the 1977-1978 season, Friday was reported to be in a London hospital suffering from a virus. In fact, Friday was in Pentonville Prison for ill-advisedly flashing a homemade warrant card at an undercover detective and attempting to shake him down so he could steal his drugs. He was promptly arrested for impersonating a policeman. After being bailed by Andrews again, Friday returned to the Cardiff squad for an away match with Brighton and Hove Albion on the 29th of October 1977. Finding himself marked throughout the game by future TV pundit Mark Lawrenson, Friday became irritated and decided to provoke Lawrenson into a slide tackle. When Lawrenson obliged him, Friday immediately kicked him in the face. Receiving a red card for this, Friday was sent off. And though it could be seen as a fairly foreseeable consequence of his behaviour, Friday was incensed. It was Mark Lawrenson after all. Leaving the pitch, Friday immediately broke into Brighton's dressing room and, finding Lawrenson's kit bag, promptly defecated into it. The furore this caused was enough for Cardiff to cancel his contract. After a career of just 4 years, Friday never returned to professional football, stating that he was just bored of people telling him what to do. Instead, he moved back to London and returned to work as a part-time plasterer. Friday was found dead in his Acton Council flat on the 27th of December 1990, at the age of just 38. Having suffered a fatal heart attack, though it has been speculated that this might have been brought on by a heroin overdose. In 1996, the Cardiff-based band Super Furry Animals released a single entitled The Man Don't Give a Fuck, dedicated to Robin Friday. The front cover of the single was a colourised photograph of Friday jogging past an astonished Miliar Alexic and flipping the V's. Soon after Friday left Cardiff, Reading manager Morris Evans was presented with a petition signed by more than 3,000 supporters asking him to re-sign Friday. Evans dutifully contacted Friday and said to him,
"Look, Rob, if you just settle down for 3 or 4 years, you could be playing for England."
Friday responded,
"How old are you?"
And after Evans answered, Friday told him,
"Well, the thing is, I'm half your age, and I've lived twice your life."
He wasn't wrong.
Next next on The English Eccentric.
The Paper Priest.
Psst, over here.
Hello, it's E.O. Higgins here. Or Edward, my friends. I'm joking, of course. I don't have any friends. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed The English Eccentric and my magnificent brown tones. If you fancied supporting the podcast, there are several ways you can. You can follow it on Facebook and Twitter at Fogg's Beef and Beer. Or you could write a review wherever you download your podcasts. You can even follow the Patreon by going to www.englisheccentric.co.uk, where you'll get early access to episodes, exclusive content, and the opportunity to suggest subjects for future shows. And if you didn't like it, you know, don't listen. In next week's episode of The English Eccentric, we'll be meeting a cleric with unusual ideas in interior design, who thought, possibly correctly, that organ music was the work of the devil, and who spent most of his time railing about the ills of humanity to small pieces of cardboard. Stay tuned!